Welcome to the Alt Accountant Podcast. I'm here with my colleague, Kirk Bowman. And today we want to talk about one of these new modern topics that are emerging quite a bit, which is the discussion around a productized service and running your business as a subscription model. And Kirk and I have been talking about value pricing for quite a bit. And now that we're trying to make this transition into discussing productized services and quite possibly subscription model, I'd like to ask you, Kirk, first of all, how are you? How are you doing this week?
I'm good, Hector.
So let me ask you, can you help me define those three terms, value pricing of the custom services that we do in accounting and bookkeeping, designing a productized service, and shifting to a subscription-based business model?
So when we say value pricing, we typically mean where we price the customer, not the service. Another way to say it is we take the time to have an individual conversation with the customer, figure out what's important to them, what is the result and the outcome they're seeking, and then set a price that captures a fair portion of that value for the provider. And the next customer, we repeat that process. But the outcome for every customer is assumed to be custom, and it's very much about a low volume, high interaction, high relationship type of business model with premium prices. So you will see stories of accountants and bookkeepers who've made this transition who go from hundreds of customers to potentially less than 100 customers. It's that type of business model. When you talk about productized service and subscription, you begin to take out some of the customization, some of the individualized pieces of it, and you're creating a more standard offering. Now, some people think, is it either or can it be both? I think it works either way. You can have a business model that is primarily based on value pricing, but still offer productized services or have a subscription component, or you can decide to completely replace that. So productized service, it's where you basically have an outcome that you're getting asked for frequently or that you can repeat on a consistent basis. And it typically involves a vertical. I think it would be hard to have a productized service without a vertical. At least with a vertical, it's going to be much more successful. So for example, you might have something that is designed to help real estate agents with cash flow. Why? Well, real estate tends to be cyclical, particularly in the colder climates. You tend to sell more real estate during the spring and summer and early fall, number one, because it's warm, and number two, because that's when families are able to move because kids are out of school. So cash flow can peak during those months for real estate agents, and it can then crater during the winter months. So you might offer something around that, or you might offer something around some other financial aspect. The idea is it would be targeted toward real estate agents. And that might be your productized service. With a subscription base, subscription really is saying, okay, we're going to trade what I call immediate cash flow for future cash flow. In other words, the idea is the customer is going to buy into something that is already ongoing. In other words, the infrastructure is already set up. You're already equipped to provide that service, and the customer is simply going to buy into that channel and then be able to take advantage of that. And a lot of times it's done at scale in association with software a lot of times. So that's kind of my viewpoint of it. What are your thoughts?
I'm with you on that. Only thing I wanted to add is with a productized service, which you described, you know, a very specific target client and a very specific sort of outcome, a productized service is usually priced upfront even before you talk to the customer, right? So in value pricing, we cannot say a price before we talk to the customer because we have to understand what the value is. With a productized service, we're assuming what the value is, or we're setting what the value is. And then we're prepackaging it in such a way that we're letting the customer pretty much choose at that point, make the decision if that's worth it to them. Now, of course, as a service provider, you're going to provide the service, which is sold as a product, and you are going to provide more value than the price they're paying. And all the principles of value pricing still apply. It's just you sell the service the same way you sell a product off the shelf. With subscription, you kind of open it up to, from my thoughts are with subscription, you open it up to feel more automated or to feel like there's less human involvement. You know, I think of subscriptions in the simplest format, such as my water bill or my electric bill. Okay. So my water bill, I turned it on once. They have my credit card on file. You know, they have my deposit. And then every time I consume some of the water, I get a bill for it. When I turn the water off, I don't get a bill for it. But if I consume zero water for the whole month, they still would charge me a minimum of like $25 or something, because under their water subscription, there's a minimum consumption assumed, and you're going to pay it no matter what. So the water company is always going to get the revenue, even if I don't use the services. Now, not all subscription models, you pay a minimum and then pay a usage fee. In some cases, they're strictly all-you-can-eat models, right, where you can pay one fee and every single thing that is within your capacity and your resources will be included. So maybe we could talk about that, Kirk, how we design something that has either guardrails at the bottom or the top, or do we just go straight to all you can eat when we think about subscriptions?
Well, I think you hit on a key distinction. With all three models, the customer's paying up front. The difference is, how do we arrive at the price? With value pricing, we're going to price the individual customer, which by definition means we must have a conversation with them in order to find out what's valuable and then be able to set a price. But with a productized service or a subscription, you're essentially standardizing to a degree and therefore pricing based on the value to a certain market segment rather than to a specific customer. And in one sense, a productized service could be paid for on a subscription. So in one sense, subscription is just a different method of paying for it, but then in another sense, it's a whole different business model, and sometimes you can get the two confused. So for example, what I think of as a traditional or common productized service is somebody goes to a website, they read a sales page, they go, I want that. It's $1,000. They put in their credit card, they pay for it, and then it's delivered. So for example, I talked about in a recent Alt Accountant session that we did with our students, a web developer who said, I will build a website for you in a week. And basically you go to his website, you read about, okay, if you want a website in a week, here's how I do it. Here's what you get. Here's the process. Here's the price. Do you want it or not? He never has a conversation with you. You just basically decide to buy based on the sales page on his site. A subscription model typically, and so for that sense, in a productized service, you're paying for a specific outcome, usually one time. Well, a subscription model, it's usually an outcome that you want ongoing. So for example, SaaS software probably is one of the most common uses of subscription model. You might pay for project management software such as Basecamp, and you just pay for that on a regular monthly recurring basis. That is one definition of a subscription. I think a better subscription model goes to where you pay to belong to something, where you pay to belong to a community. And so, yes, you'll probably get resources as part of being part of the community. You might even get, you know, some type of initial jumpstart outcome. But the idea that by paying the subscription, you get to be a part of something. You get to be a member of something, a part of a community. And there's lost value as soon as you stop paying it because you're no longer part of that community. That, in my mind, is a true subscription model, because the idea that when you stop paying that recurring fee or that recurring price, there is, you know, you may no longer find it valuable, which is a lot of the times the reason people stop paying a subscription. But that's kind of how I view it.
So to summarize, a productized service could also be purchased in a monthly subscription, annual, quarterly subscription basis. But generally speaking, a productized service will have a finite sort of process and the project will end at some point and the exchange will end and you say, okay, you provided the service, it was sold as a product and it's completed, right? There's no, you're not, you know, hooked to that provider anymore. You're not working with a customer anymore. You can take the same concept of the productized service and sell it, you know, as an ongoing subscription. And the reason why we're saying it's also a productized service is because the scope is predefined and the way we approach it is predefined and the job to be done outcome could potentially also be predefined while the target customer, it's all predefined. But what makes it particularly different is that the satisfaction or the outcome has a permanent perpetuity, a value in perpetuity while you pay for that subscription. And the minute you stop paying that subscription, you no longer receive the value from the productized service, correct?
It's interesting that the ideal combination would be some type of initial productized service that customer pays for, they pay up front, and they get an immediate outcome in a certain defined time frame. But then there is an option, or not, maybe it's included as part of it, of an ongoing subscription. That's even a better model where the customer invests up front to kind of get a jump start, but then there's some component that keeps them going, keeps them ongoing. That would be, you know, one business model. Another version of that would be where they get this jump start when they first join, but rather than paying a premium amount up front for that, that's just built into the subscription model so that literally you'll know that, okay, after the customer has been on the subscription plan for X number of periods, then you consider that, you know, they have paid for that. So that's another business model. It's interesting that subscription can have so many different components to it. Like, for example, I was a consultant in a software field where the software was sold on a perpetual license basis. And gradually the company over several years, probably about a decade, gradually started changing to subscription type pricing. And so that was one of the first things where I saw basically just taking the same product, but gradually over time changing how people would pay for it. And it was initially there was resistance, but they decided they were in it for the long game. And so they would just gradually over time, they would continue to push kind of the recurring business model, and they would still offer it, but it was not prominent. It was not mentioned as much, et cetera. And so they realized for them, it was a long game of a period of probably over about a decade to switch their customers over.
Let me ask you a specific question and try to draw some similarities, because these are uncharted territories for the both of us, right? Because, you know, we've done value pricing for the bulk of the work, right? I do have some eBooks that I sell and some courses that actually apply to this concept of productized services, but my business model is not fully subscription or fully productized yet. But so as we kind of learn about how we can go about this, one of the most traditional services that I can think of that a lot of my colleagues do is they take a brand new client in and they do what we call a cleanup, right? We go back and look at their messy books and get them to a point where, let's say, December 31st, 2018, they're good to go, they're clean. That was a project. In some cases, they charged by the hour. In some cases, it was fixed price. It would have been nice if they could productize it to, you know, speed up the sales process and get more customers to do that, get their foot in the door for that. And then they offer monthly bookkeeping after that to make sure that it doesn't become messy again. Could we draw some similarities between one-time cleanup and then monthly bookkeeping to this concept of the combination of productized service and then subscription?
Certainly. So I've said before on the show that cleanup of books has no inherent value by itself. No customer is going to pay just to get their books cleaned up. They pay in order to get to an outcome that having clean books allows them to have, whether that is reduced taxes, better control on expenses, an opportunity to hone the bottom line, an opportunity for growth, whatever that is. So if you're looking at cleanup, and one of the biggest complaints that I hear from bookkeepers and accountants is that, you know, a lot of times customers come with messy books. And so cleaning that up is part of providing the service. So an ideal model, I think, would be where the customer buys into some type of annual subscription, whether they pay for it on an annual basis or they pay for it monthly, but they're locked into 12 months, where that cleanup is part of what's provided as part of that annual subscription. In other words, in fact, a lot of accountants and bookkeepers already run their business roughly. I don't want to call it a subscription model because they're still pricing the customers, but you know, one business model would just be to say, and it's easier to do this again with a vertical, like I said earlier, but to say, okay, we're going to provide, you know, bookkeeping services for cleaning companies that, you know, either commercially clean businesses or residential, and we're just going to focus on them and we just want to provide accounting. Or for example, somebody in our alt accountant class is focusing in on the film industry, right? Independent films, doing accounting for them. And so offering something where the cleanup basically is just part of what they get for the first year. It's considered part of the entire scope.
And to tie this back to the three pillars of success for the Alt Accountant program, which is positioning, pricing, and innovation, I think that both of us feel that getting to the point where you can build a productized service is that perfect meeting point between being positioned to solve a specific problem for a specific customer, right? Specializing on that so you do it really well, better than the rest, faster than the rest, more accurate than the rest, and also have the reputation that that work that you do over and over and over also has the best results. Then being able to, now that you know exactly how long it takes and what the work entails, being able to price it, like being very intentional with the pricing, merging your specialty, your micro specialty, hyper specialty, and your pricing skills into one, the ultimate combination to that is that perfect productized service that makes you stand out. And to take it one step further, if you can create your own service that's productized, right? It has specific process, a specific name, especially a unique name that you can trademark. So by definition, you can't compare with anyone else, right? That's kind of the cusp of getting really deep into the weeds of becoming a specialist and also becoming skilled at pricing.
I think there's a lot of discussion now within the accounting and bookkeeping space about subscription. Some of the thought leaders in the space have begun to kind of bring that to the forefront as kind of the next frontier. I think that's kind of coupled with a lot of assistance that's coming from technology that is automating a lot of the manual processes. And it's not something that's coming, it's something that's here. And so it's not something that you've got to prepare for in the future. It's something you've got to be willing to adapt to now. I think ideally a business model that probably encompasses two or possibly three of these things is something that allows the business to be more successful. So for example, you have some type of subscription service that the majority of all your customers join. You have some type of product service, productized service that allows new customers or even existing customers to buy in at the low end of your product ladder. But then on the high end, you're still taking advantage of those premium opportunities by value pricing, having the value conversation with the customer and then pricing that specific outcome. A business that's combined of those three, I think it's more sustainable. I think it's more robust. And I also think it's taking advantage of different aspects of each of those three that when you combine them together creates a more robust, a stronger business. Think of it like a portfolio, right? If you have your business portfolio includes a strong productized offering that people buy into to get on board, a subscription plan that say, you know, 75, 80% of your customers are part of, and then you're still able to premium price the top tier, you're in a position to allow customers to buy at different levels and you're not leaving anyone out. But I think particularly, well, we've said it really on all three, strong positioning puts you in a better position to use one, two, or even three of those.
So to wrap it up, here's a question to our listeners and watchers of the podcast. What do you think about this? And our colleague, Ron Baker, talks about this all the time, that when Toyota comes up with a new car, they think of the type of customer that's going to buy the car. They think of the price point that the customer is going to pay for the car. Then they go back to the engineers and say, make this work, right? It's not the inputs or the components that justify the cost. It is the price that you set in the market that would then justify how you design the internal workflow or the product itself. So in the spirit of this, if you were to work within the following restriction, let's assume that you were to change your business model, but not change it, but let's say you were going to do the bulk of the work you were going to do was going to be in a subscription productized service. And you were going to offer essentially three services. One is a $200 service, one a $400 service, and the other one a $700 service. So these are the three numbers, right? What were the numbers again? Kirk, I said 200, 400, and 700, correct?
All right. That sounds right.
All right, so you throw 200, 400, and 700. So let's say you're only going to offer on these subscription productized services, you're going to offer these three things. Okay. And you need to now go back and figure out what would I change about my operation, about my service offering, about how I do things, how I train my staff and my team, how I limit the scope, what technology and what resources I have to bring in to only being able to offer those three subscription-based productized services, 400, 200, 400, and 700, just to throw three numbers out there. What would you change? So Kirk, would you like to add some ideas to that or just let it simmer like that?
I think it's just interesting, as you suggested, just to kind of ponder wherever you are on the spectrum. So say, for example, you already value price. What would it look like to add subscription to your business model? What would it look like to add productized service? Dream and brainstorm about what would your business look like if you added those three components? What would you change? What would you adapt? Thinking about that, I think, puts you in a position because a lot of times people hear us talk about these ideas and they think it's a good idea, but they never go further than the good idea. But I think brainstorming and dreaming of what it would look like is the next step. Now, obviously, execution comes later, but thinking about it simply challenges you to look at things from a different perspective. And I think that's where the value in this discussion comes from.
And that's the only place innovation can come from, by you thinking of crazy ideas like that. And by the way, they're not crazy, not crazy at all, right? Intuit, we had this whole discussion in a previous podcast. Intuit had tested $200 a month to offer bookkeeping services, right? That's not live yet, but they set a price, $200. So now, once they get all the information about, are people willing to pay that, they're going to reverse engineer and figure out how can we do this for $200, right? So that's kind of the thought process.
Well, I think it's interesting, and we'll wrap it up with this, but a lot of times we don't want to change unless we know it's going to be a sure thing. We're scared of the risk. But realize that Apple did not know with certainty that people would buy the iPhone. Somebody had a theory that people would like a device that had a screen that you could touch and interact with your finger, and the display could change. So no longer was the phone hardware controls, it was all software based. And that device over time could replace many things, your watch, your calculator, your iPod or your Walkman, and so on and so forth, your health device that, tracks your steps or your blood pressure, so on and so forth. Somebody had a theory. Ultimately, Steve Jobs had a theory. And it was that theory that was the catalyst that drove it forward to execution. Same thing's going to happen in every other business. Everything starts with a theory. Everything starts with an idea.
And think about the iPhone is a subscription now. I think it was Verizon or Sprint that reported that 40% of the new iPhone sales were purchased under that two-year payment plan where people can pay $40, $50 a month to change their phones. So some of these big companies, they're moving to subscription, Amazon with Amazon Prime. It's not about it being a sure thing or not being a sure thing. I don't think at this point we're being very innovative by moving to subscription. We're almost, you know, catching the trend at this point. It's just, I think most accountants say subscription accounting, that doesn't make any sense, you know, but you know, the market will force us to do this change. So I think it's time to at least start thinking about this. And for 2019 or 2020, could you pull this off? It's a big question. So Kirk, with that, I'll see you next week. Great discussion today.